Hey everyone, welcome to episode 83 of Radio Free Nintendo. This is your host, Jonathan Metz, and I'm joined once again this week by the new crew, at least for now. We've got James Jones.
Hey.
John Lindemann.
Yay, yay.
And Greg Lay.
Buenos ding dong diddly dias, everybody.
Whoa, okay. We're speaking different languages here now.
I feel utterly inadequate now.
Yeah, Greg has been playing my Wingdings coach, apparently.
My Flanders coach, actually.
Flanders coach.
He's a Merdingliergar.
That's weird, okay, because I know how Flanders talks, but with the accent and everything, completely different.
That was the Flanders family reunion, for the record, where you had the Spanish Flanders and all the rest of it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. It's pretty obscure.
No wonder it sounded weird.
Yeah, they go all the way down the line. And there's isn't one of them in a kilt?
Pretty much all the different national stereotypes.
Uh-huh. By the way, on this podcast, we talk about Nintendo.
Wow.
What? Really?
That's what I heard. Usually we start off with our new business, so, you know, whatever games we've been playing or what the hell is up with us, you know, like how many kids we had the previous week and, you know, diseases that we may have caught in the middle of the night. James, why don't you start off with that?
Well, I haven't had money, so I've been replaying old GameCube games that I, for whatever reason, stopped playing.
I heard the Wii works for that.
I suppose it does. I'm not going to go over anything you should go make an effort to acquire, because generally speaking, it wasn't very good. Let's see. For example, the last game I was playing, or the game currently in there, is Bloody Roar Primal Fury.
Ooh, I rented that once.
I rented that once.
That's about all it's good for.
Yeah, and somehow or another, it's come to my attention that I own it now.
Wait, did you just discover a game that you didn't know you owned?
Yes, that actually happens from time to time.
Not to me.
Yeah.
Well, to me it does.
But okay.
I feel so good about it.
He was drunk, you know.
I apparently only paid $5 for it, so don't feel too bad, but...
Oh, okay.
It's not a very good game.
Oh, I have a copy of Irritating Stick for PlayStation 1 that I bought for $1 at the video store.
That's pretty obscure.
It's awesome.
Yes.
Anyway.
It's worth $1.
Irritating Stick. Yeah. That should be a Wii game.
Oh, God.
Anyway, it actually would work really well as a Wii game, but...
Yeah, I'm going to strongly discourage anyone who ever sees a copy of Bloody Roar Primal Fury from ever even contemplating buying it. It's good for a rental, but after about a half hour, it's done.
That's good graphics, though.
Yeah, it did, especially since it was pretty close to launch, I thought. And because it was a port.
It's made by the same people who made the three Naruto fighting games on GameCube, which became progressively better.
I was about to say, is that a compliment or a warning?
Ty Sugar says that Naruto Gekitu Taizen 3, or whatever it's called, the one that they have not really brought out in America ever, and they probably never will, is like better than Smash Brothers Melee.
Oh boy.
So there is a contingency that thinks they're amazing.
Is that really a contingency?
And they're made by the same people as Bloody Roar Primal Fury.
Does that count as like a form of heresy?
Yeah, it's one of the sacred cows right there, Melee. Mm-hmm. You can't be talking against that. Yeah.
Let me put it this way. Even with that endorsement, I still wasn't really interested in playing those games.
Yeah, well.
That's about all we have to say about that. No Naruto love over here.
Silence.
Everybody just kind of walks away whistling with that one. Naruto, you suck.
Okay, so thanks for the retro roundup, James. How about you, Lindemann?
probably about the only thing I worked on this week was I'm developing a nice little backlog of Wii games. You know, there's been certain, let's just say, high-profile releases on other platforms that are worthy of my attention.
In the past
week? In the past 2 months, let's just say.
Yeah.
But yeah, but right now sitting on my shelf waiting to be played, I have Super Mario Galaxy, which I've just kind of tapped the surface of, and I have Battalion Wars 2, and I have Mario Strikers Charged, which actually probably the one I'm most intrigued with is Mario Strikers Charged.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's not good. It's one of the few games we got in Europe earlier, naturally, I suppose. But it's pretty good. I mean, it's not a whole lot different from the first one. If you played that on the GameCube, it was pretty late, so I doubt that many people do. I think it was relatively quite surprisingly successful for a late GameCube game, because you know, obviously it was just so dead for like the last 2 years of its existence. But it's not a huge quantum leap, and the Wii controls are kind of superfluous, and the online is highly exploitable. But you can have fun with it. I recommend local. If you can get people, it's far more fun.
Okay. Yeah,
or you can play online, and you can try to guess whether or not you're actually playing against another real person.
Oh, the cheap, just disgusting tactics that only people could do that. Let's just put it that way.
Really?
I don't know, man. Those are clever programmers. I was just thinking, you know, the thing in Smash Brothers Brawl where if an online player drops out, it just replaces it with AI and it doesn't even really tell you. What if all Wii games do that? And Smash Brothers is just the first one to be honest about it. I mean, we wouldn't really know the difference. There's no communication in these games.
The full disclosure in the dojo revealing all about the Wii's online platform. It's not really online.
Yeah, what if there is no internet connection?
Simulated online experience.
it's all a big charade. No, but with Mario Strikers, I swear, some people on there, all possible AI constructs of people, are just so ridiculously masochistic it's untrue. Like they will try and score one goal, and then exploit a glitch that just keeps the ball in the goalie's hand for the rest of the game, and just play for time.
That's so disappointing.
Who wants to win that badly that they'd subject themselves to 3 minutes of abject boredom?
In that game, too. In that game.
I mean, who
it's
is not it?
Like yeah, I mean, what see... do you have to gain?
I know, it's like, from... really, like, you're ever going to see a worldwide Mario Strikers Charge tournament, or like, you know, you're going to see that, like, alongside Counter-Strike or Halo 3.
Yeah, yeah,
come on.
It's the height of pettiness and absurdity. It's just, I'd expect it from, I don't know, let's say Bill Belichick.
I'd expect it from children. Wait a minute. On a Wii game? Never.
Good point.
I was just thinking that, like, maybe online Wii games should start out with this ESRB disclaimer that says, "Warning: game content may seem to change during online play," and online is in quotation marks.
Are you implying that Nintendo might add angry 8-year-old voice tracks just to throw us off?
Oh yeah,
Nintendo.
I don't know. That might be too controversial for them.
They're taking bots to a new level.
Yeah. All right. Well, so basically, Lindemann, you haven't really been playing anything. You're just telling us what you would like to be playing.
I have been playing a little bit of Contra 4 and a little bit of Life Signs, actually. So there you go.
Okay, good.
There you go. So that's
I can get behind both of those. Mm-hmm. Contra 4 is a game that I'm hoping it's one of those that I'll pick up one day when I have like a lot of store credit from trading in bad review copies and don't know what else to get.
Yeah, I mean, so. I think if you're a fan of any retro gaming, I think Contra 4 is just one you really have to have. I mean, if you liked any of the games in the series, it's pretty much the best aspects of those games rolled into one. It's really good.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. Greg, about you?
Well, on the topic of Contra 4, I'm very much on the cusp of defeating it in normal, which...
Is that when you unlock the old games?
Possibly, I'm not entirely sure. You might actually get that by doing easy, so I forget exactly which one it is, which way around, because one unlocks a challenge mode, and one unlocks the old game. But I've never tried it on easy, because it's just kind of embarrassing, I think, from what I hear. It's just ridiculous, like, you get way more lives, and the weapons are all superpowered and everything.
You get, like, 30 lives per continue?
I think it's 10, isn't it?
It's something like, I think you get 8.
So it's still harder than the original Contra with the code.
Yeah, I mean, I think you get, like, right now I'm playing on easy, so you've pretty much just insulted me and my entire family. However, I will say.
Greg, do you have 6 fingers?
Podcast evolves to smack talk.
However, well, I will say that it is still challenging, but you get tons of lives and continues. I mean, you can just, like, past the point of it making sense, really. I mean, it's not even challenging. It's just
I must be a big wuss, but that's always the way I like to play the original Contra. For me, to me, if Contra didn't have the code, I wouldn't play it. I'm talking about the original.
You know, the biggest problem,
Contra 3, I do okay, but...
The biggest problem I had with EZ, from what I've heard, is the fact that the way it works in normal is weapons you kind of pick up, you kind of stack them, and they become better. So, like, say for instance, the spread gun. At first, it hasn't got very much of a wide spread, but if you pick two of them up on top of each other, it takes on the huge spread, and, you know, it's pretty damn effective. Now, on easy, the first one you pick up is the best one.
Okay.
And the thing about that is that means that all the weapons on easy are far, far more powerful than they ever seem to be in, like, Contra 3 or something like that. So that's why, to me, it just felt like, whoa, this is, you know, that would be too easy. Not so much thing. I could see the continues.
Yeah, like, you get these guns that are really powerful, and you're like, you know what, for something, I mean, you get so many lives that you're like, these guns are so powerful, I mean, I'm going pretty far having no skill in this game whatsoever. So I can see where you're coming from with that. Because, you can go pretty far just kind of messing around, not really knowing what you're doing.
I just think the lives and continues issue I could kind of see. I just think, because sometimes you are not in the mood to play through a game so many times that you can memorize things so that you do it flawlessly and develop a detailed choreography. People don't always want to do that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I just think they went too far dumbing it down with taking the weapons to the maximum straight away. And that was kind of a sort of, because that's different from the other Contra games, isn't it? The way you stack weapons, you didn't do that before. I thought that was quite a good feature of the normal game. And it's kind of, for people who do want to play with more continues and lives, I thought it was kind of lame that you didn't get that. So that's why I did my easy. I'm very close to completing that. But, when you get very close and you fail, the thought of going all the way through it again is kind of... Mm-hmm. Not tempting. It's crushing stuff. Yeah. And speaking of hard stuff, I've been doing Metroid Prime 3 on hyper mode a little, which is
what is hyper mode all about?
Well, it's just hard, you know, because the way they did it this time is that they sort of didn't call them just like easy, normal, and hard. They had like sort of normal, which was really sort of easy, and then you had veteran, which was kind of a medium difficulty, and then hyper mode was the hardest one. And it's pretty much on a par with, you know, the hard modes of the previous games, although Metroid Prime 2 is still probably the most difficult. That was very hard. But with the
Prime 2 is hard on the default.
It is. I did play through it on hard, actually, and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I sort of took on a greater appreciation for some of the things in the game the second time. Which is kind of happening this time too, because the one thing about it in hyper mode is, because it's so much harder to kill enemies and bosses sometimes, you really have to be a lot smarter about how you manage hyper mode. You know, when you insert the energy tank and sort of go you have to be a lot, you have to flirt with actually sort of, you know, when you get overloaded and you just die on the spot and sort of turn into dark. You actually have to flirt with that a bit more to get a result a lot of the time. So there is more of a risk reward kind of thing. I kind of utilized it pretty dumb, you know, kind of dumbly, I suppose, when I just did it now and again when I felt like it and I had the energy to do it. Whereas with this time,
on normal, it's really overpowered.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like,
I mean, like, you can basically inject one energy tank and kill a boss in about 30 seconds if you're pretty good.
Yeah,
with a few exceptions.
There's some where it's kind of necessary in normal. Or certainly on veteran anyway. But with hyper mode, you do have to think about it a bit more and it kind of becomes more of that. They talked about it in the run up to the release as like this risk reward mechanic. And I don't think that ever really showed up when I played it the first time, but it is manifesting itself a bit in the second one through. So, you know, that I thought was one of the good things. And it's just nice to play through those games again. They've got great atmosphere. And, you know, the soundtracks and the art design and everything, they're just fantastic. So pretty much any excuse to play through them is a good thing. And
I think for me to play through Corruption again at a higher difficulty level, I'd have to know that the experience was really very, very different, you know, that would really surprise me on the way through. And my understanding is that the higher difficulties really just reduce your health and increase the health and the damage of the enemies.
It pretty much
I mean, they
is,
don't,
yeah,
it don't really change the AI patterns or the placement of objects or things
no,
like
it,
that.
It
right?
pretty much is that. But in some cases, even a seemingly sort of trivial change like that can make things significantly more entertaining for me, personally. Like I said, with the hyper mode thing, it kind of changes things up a bit. But like, say for instance, with Zero Mission, that was so easy. Normally, but playing it on...
It's still easy on hard mode, too.
Yeah, but at least it actually disciplined you a bit, rather than just, I could just run into this room full of stuff shooting at me, and I don't give a crap, because I'm going to come out the other side anyway. At least you had to kind of think about, like, you know, I can counteract this enemy's attack pattern, or something, you know, some sort of danger. There was just no peril at all in the normal, so I still enjoyed it on hard, even though it was just decreasing your life and decreasing your missiles. As far as I can tell.
You know, I feel like Prime 3 was substantially easier, partially because of the control scheme. Like, it almost made the game too easy. And my first thought when I was playing it was when the lead up to Red Steel, when they did the Game Informer article, they were saying that they needed to have better AI, which they utterly failed at because of the control schemes of the Wii. And I still feel like that wasn't even in place in Prime 3, which is kind of sad because it was so polished. And I wonder if that's going to happen in future games like that, if they make the AI smarter to compensate for the fact that it's so damn easy to hit anything with the Wii controller.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate point. I mean, they did try and compensate for that with the different kinds of bosses. You know, it wasn't literally like playing Metro Prime 1 with Wii controls. You know, they tried a few design choices that might make it a bit trickier, but... on veteran, I still found it fairly easy.
I mean, they help you a lot being able to grab stuff, you know, like with, I think, is it the Z trigger that you grab stuff with? Like, you can grab onto things to targets. I mean, a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
You mean the lock on.
It makes it a lot easier. I mean, you would think that, you know, especially, you know, on Hyper or something like that, they would just take that right out of the game. So you would have to literally pinpoint something to hit it. I mean, that to me would make it more challenging and make the experience
Well,
different.
I suppose they just expect you to use the lock-on free aim, and some of the bosses are kind of seem to be crafted around that, didn't
yeah.
they? So they couldn't,
That's
yeah.
what I did,
they couldn't
yeah.
really take that out at that point. It was yeah. too kind of embedded into the choices of where they designed some of the bosses and things.
You know, they spoke so much about the free aim in the lead-up to the game's release, too. I mean, they were touting it like it was the greatest thing to hit FPSs.
Well, I enjoyed adventures. It. It felt good.
I think the control is the greatest thing to hit FPSs, but you know, but the problem is Metroid Prime 3 is not a first-person shooter. It's still
yeah.
not.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
And
absolutely.
It's just not designed to challenge your reflexes in that way. And they didn't want to make it so tricky and so difficult that the average person couldn't play it because they were, you know, had this grand idea of like selling it to moms and people in the airport or whatever those commercials show.
How's that one working
out? Complete
at?
Utter failure to do that, but you know, they just didn't want to make it like a really hardcore shooter. And as a Metroid fan, I appreciate the way that they did it because I don't play, you know, I don't want to play that game to go through and play it like Half-Life.
Yeah, but I think it sort of devalued the danger and the excitement of some of the scripted events if I knew that the space pirates were completely and utterly incapable of beating me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the solution here is to have more refined difficulty levels so that when you increase the difficulty level of the game, you're not just changing a bunch of statistics, but you actually change the way the enemies behave. And that way you can bump it up and make it more like a PC-style first-person shooter and less like a straightforward adventure game where you just randomly shoot things and they die. But anyway, you don't want to get me on Metroid.
Yeah.
However, I can start my new business with sort of a related game related to not only Corruption but also Zero Mission, which Greg mentioned, and that's that I picked up for $15 the other day at a CompUSA that was closing for good, and so everything was on, you know, like 20% off.
Sigh.
Picked up Scourge Hive for DS for like $15.
Well done.
And
I'm a huge fan of this game.
The reason I brought it up is because Lindemann, you know, had it for a long time and wrote a bunch of previews about it and did the review and really liked it. And I just, all I could really remember from his review is that it's basically like a Metroid game. And so that was enough for me for $15 to try it out. And I do like it so far. It's isometric, so it's not... It doesn't control as tightly as you would like a 2D Metroid game to be. But other than that, it's really a lot like a Metroid game, especially the Metroid Prime games, because there is a lot of shooting, there are a lot of enemies, and the level design sort of reminds me of Metroid Prime, where you're sort of moving from one save point to another, you know, and there's this sense of you're always in danger in between them, and you only really feel safe when you're saving the game. And it feels like you're sort of moving from one upgrade to the next. You get different weapons, and you get this cool grappling beam thing, this grappling hook. It's really good, and it avoids most of the problems of isometric games that have jumping and moving platforms.
Yeah, what I think is interesting about it is that how, you know, everybody says, well, you know, Metroid Prime, that's taking the 2D Metroid and putting it into 3D. Scourge Hive is almost like taking the 3D Metroid, and it's what that would be if you put it into a 2D
back into
game.
2D.
It's pretty funny. But it's well done.
Yeah, but, you know, isometric is not really 2D or 3D. It's sort of both. You're basically playing the game in three dimensions. It's just kind of a crude, old-fashioned way to represent three dimensions.
Yeah, and
I mean,
there are some problems with that. I mean, like, I found myself, you know, I would lose my character behind stuff. I mean, it does shadow your character when you walk behind columns and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that
and it
helps.
Looks...
And you have good shadows when you jump, and that really helps you line up your jumps and
yeah,
things like
but,
that.
Yeah, but, I mean, you still have some problems. Like, sometimes it's... hard to get the right angle on something to hit it, like the enemies that come at you. You know, they're pretty fast, and sometimes it's hard because you're kind of dealing with, you know, hitting them on you know, diagonals sometimes. So, but I mean, overall, it's a very well done game, and I actually still have yet to play through it. I'd like to. I think it's a pretty lengthy game too.
Well,
it seems like it.
In terms of the pacing, is it as backtrack oriented as the Metroid games are, or is it more linear?
It is. Similar, I would say. It's a little more, at first it's a little more guided, and then as you get into it, it seems to be becoming less linear as I get.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, you work through down to like the planet, you start off on a ship, you work down onto the surface of a planet, and then it kind of opens it up into a hub world that you can move around in. Like you can go up and down on elevators and move all around. You're kind of at this lab.
Right, yeah, it's kind of seeming like
Prime
that,
3,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's pretty impressive. And like I said, it's an isometric game, and I have historically criticized a lot of isometric games. But the controls for it and the way the jumping works is surprisingly good for an isometric game. It really minimizes the problems of that view that I've seen in a lot of other games. And other than Scourge Hive. The main thing I've been playing the past few days... Well, I played a little bit more of Geometry Wars. I got... I opened up every planet and got at least a bronze medal on every single planet. And so now I'm going back through and trying to get golds on everything. And the only planets that I haven't opened up yet are the ones that you have to connect to the DS version to unlock, which is so annoying.
Oh, that is annoying.
But I'm trying to... Yeah. But Steven Rodriguez has the DS game, and I'm trying to see if he'll mail it to me for one day so I can unlock it and just mail it back to him.
FedEx exchange.
The problem is, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to buy both the Wii and the
DS
versions
package.
Because they're exactly the same game.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's exactly the same game. So I have no motivation to go out and buy the DS game, but I love the Wii version so much that I really want to open up these last 8 or 9 planets in the final galaxy. So I'm trying to figure out a way to do it. And I was wondering the other day, I wonder if there's some kind of hack where I can install a program on my computer and have my wireless router broadcast a signal that makes the Wii think it's the DS game.
I bet it's possible, but I doubt anybody spent the time to develop it for that one specific
game.
Exactly.
For one game.
That's what I figured.
For one tiny bit of one game.
Well, if you think about it, if you were able to do that, you could do the same thing for, say, Pokemon, and then you could, like, play Pokemon Battle Revolution and just send all these Pokemon that you didn't actually earn in the DS game to the Wii.
Oh, somebody's probably developing that then.
Yep.
Right. That's all I'm saying. Like, that is a game that people would actually
Pokemon
go to the trouble
Battle
for.
Revolution.
Show me your Pokemans.
Yeah.
Come on, people.
Oh, yeah. That sounds kind of annoying. I mean, in no small part due to Johnny's high praise for the game, I'm going to be getting Geometry Wars, which came out on Friday over here, finally. And it's
good price, right?
It's actually tremendously good value, relatively speaking. It's the equivalent of about $35, which is...
That's less than it is in America.
But normally we get ripped so bad. I mean, for instance, which also came out on Friday, Zaka Wiki, which is $40 in America, came out at virtually twice Geometry Wars price.
Jeez.
Over 30.
Ouch. They just don't even want you to buy it.
Well, yeah, but what's interesting is that in Europe it's published by Nintendo. And it's getting the full first party advertising treatment, and you know, it's got published by Nintendo on the box. So I guess that's why they're charging full price for it. They think there's gonna be a sort of Nintendo bump on the sales there, because it is actually, you know, people say, well, you know, everybody just buys Nintendo games for Wii. Well, technically it is one over here, so maybe it'd be interesting to compare the sales figures on that.
I don't know. I mean, nobody knows those characters from a hole in the ground, so.
Yeah, see, so that, I guess that's what will help disentangle what it is about Nintendo games. Is it the Nintendo brand, or is it the characters within the Nintendo brand that actually bring people in?
Well, you know.
Yeah, but Wiki is like the cutest character ever.
No.
Ever.
Ever?
I mean, it's like painfully cute. Yeah. I've seen this game. I haven't really played it, but a friend brought it over and I played like one early level of it. And all I could think was, oh my god, that character is like, just like, painfully cute. Really, it's like, it's almost like too much to look at. He's so and he makes these little, you know, the sounds he makes and everything.
See, that's what you didn't know. That's actually what was in the Ark of the Covenant, spoiler alert, in Raiders of the Lost. It just melted the Nazis' faces.
Melted everything.
He's so cute.
Killing them with cuteness.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't see that coming.
Well, you know, when I was doing a research for a potential hot topic on Nintendo helping out third parties on the Wii, trying to avoid the whole third party games don't sell, I came across the article where Nintendo of Europe announced they were going to publish that game. And they were just, I can't remember what executive it was, but they were just heaping ungodly amounts of praise on it. And I was just wondering, what the hell is Nintendo of America doing if they're just going to let the game sit there while Capcom fails to push it at all?
I guess you have to, you know, at least sort of commend Nintendo of Europe for a little bit of enterprise in spirit in terms of, you know, it's like, well, here's a game that kind of fits with our aesthetic, fits with our demographic, and, you know, if we put our weight behind it, maybe we could turn it into something, you know, a bit of a seller.
Well, they do that in America, too. I mean, they're publishing Professor Layton, and they do things with... Final Fantasy, and they've actually published a number of games from third parties in America.
Well, this is the thing, see, Nintendo of Europe always seems far more lackadaisical about everything, you know, just releasing games, their own games, you know, so for them to do something this kind of forward, outward looking is kind of shocking.
Now, how did Zack and Wiki do in the UK press? Did it get awards? Because I know over here it was kind of like a critical hit, you know, kind of like one of those super
absolutely,
hits.
No. It's done very well. All the import reviews, because it just came out on Friday, but everybody reviewed it on import anyway, are very, very favourable, very much in lockstep with what most of the American perception was.
You know, I was kind of surprised, because that's a game that really goes the extra mile to prove the Wii Control can do more than minigames, and I really expected Nintendo to do something with that, to say, hey, look at this, it's not all minigames, but instead they went and released more minigames.
Okay, well, we're encroaching on another half hour new business segment here.
Yes.
But you know, we're talking about games, so I'm all for it. But let me wrap up by saying really quickly, the last thing that I've been playing is I finally I think yesterday just finally put Mario Galaxy back into the Wii. And it's been like 2 months since I played this game. There was this huge burst when I first bought it, and then like other things came. I mean, I got up to like 90 stars or whatever, and it seems like I'm sort of hitting the point of diminishing returns on the entertainment factor, you know, and then other things came in and I started having to play other games, so it just got put down and I haven't played it in ages. And it was one of those things that like I kept looking at it on the shelf, but it just was almost afraid to put it in. You know, like it kind of mounts this pressure to play it, and I just didn't. I wasn't sure if I wanted to. Anyway, I finally stuck it back in, and I'm up to 110 stars now, so I'm getting really close to the big reveal.
Ooh.
the big crazy bonus for getting 120 that was spoiled to me like 3 days before I even got the game.
I still don't know what that is.
But I still want to check it out, you know. I still want to
see it. I will say I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. That's all I'll say about that.
Really? Yeah. I don't think it's enough to get me to play through the whole game again, but it might get me to play the game for another couple hours.
Now I want
to
know what the big bonus is. I have to go spoil it for myself.
I'm not telling you.
Yeah, we don't.
I think I know what it is, but I'll never tell.
It's not that hard to guess, really. It's the kind of thing that should have been in Super Mario 64 and wasn't.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't know why.
So they finally rectified that. But I will say, right now I'm basically going through and doing all the comments on the last couple of worlds. Yeah, and sure. Two things I can say about that. Number one, some of these are so freaking hard.
Yeah, it kicks in, doesn't it? You know, at the end.
God. Today I had to get 100 purple coins in 3 minutes on a level where you can't step on the same place more than
Yeah, this is the one that Evan mentioned, Luigi's purple coins in the Toy Time thing.
It's brutal. I mean, it's really brutal. And when I finally got the star, I felt every muscle in my body suddenly relax. It was just so nerve-wracking to try to do that. It took me like 10
lives,
but I got it.
That was the last
one
I got, actually, on the first time through. That's great, though. I loved it. That was awesome. This is brilliant. A bit sad, isn't it, last?
Yeah. Well, there was plenty of that in Sunshine. And if you get deep enough into Galaxy, you'll find some there, too. The other thing I'll say about it is this process of mixing up the comets or getting the comets to appear is so annoying, because every time I go beat a comet and get a star for it, I have to go back to the purple guy and pay him 20 star bits to reshuffle the comet so I can go do another.
Yeah, that's really it's a counter to the rest of the game, isn't it? Because, you know, there's that period
it's so much trouble.
It's like the period at the opening of the game where you're unlocking galaxies faster than, you know, you're sort of getting stars, really. And it's just you could go and do so many different things. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, I want to do this particular one, but I can't. And I've got to go and do this to make it appear. And, or you've limited in your choices. It just seems so unlike the game. Very odd.
Well, this of course I'm getting down to where there aren't very many stars left anyway. But this morning I started up the game, and I went over and paid the guy 20 star bits to mix up the comets, and he shows me the map, and there are no comets on it, and I had to go through the whole process again before some of them finally
showed
up.
Stupid.
That's
like who programmed this shit? Come on.
I thought there had to be at least one somewhere.
Yeah, I never experienced that, but then I never really bribed the guy very much, to be honest. I think they were just reaching to make the star bits justified or something. I don't know.
Well, considering you end up with like...
I've got like 3,000 of them now that I'll never need.
Once you get the final secret galaxies, they become useless.
Yeah. Anyway, looking forward to finally wrapping that up here in the next couple days. But yeah, I just thought it was really weird. This is like one of the most polished games I've ever seen, and there's this completely ridiculous, like, menu navigation deal at the very end of it, just so you can get the last.
And what sucks about that is the fact that you will always think of that when you think of that game. You'll be like, wow, that's one of the best games I've ever played.
I know, because the last
that
thing
annoying
that happened
little
to
part.
Me. Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, you can't point to that game and say that that's practically a perfect game. You're just like, ugh, not quite.
Even during the game, when you were trying to just get through the levels, sometimes, you know, an annoying comet would show up and you'd have to just go around and come back later. And so I think the comets as a whole were kind of annoying, because not only were you at the whim of getting the ones you wanted where you needed them, but sometimes you were at the whim of getting one you didn't want where you wanted to
go. Yeah, I think they just took the whole comet conceit a bit too seriously. You know, it's a Mario game.
It's just kind of annoying the way it's implemented. I like the idea of going back and doing these challenges on previous levels. And a lot of them, you know, like the whole purple coin thing. When Evan was talking about this before I got very far in the game, I was really worried about it. I thought, this sounds like blue coins and
Sunshine.
It's
so much better than that.
It's really not like that at all. Because the coin placements are, you know, someone sat there and said, okay, let's put coins here, here, and here, and make sure that, you know, they're in a rush to go through this, and that it's challenging, and they're actually well-constructed challenges that they put
together.
It's
almost like level design.
But the implementation of getting to these challenges is terrible. Anyway, it seems like every week one of us comes on here and bitches about something in Mario Galaxy, but I think it's just because we've been playing it consistently, and we get into the nitty-gritty details and we find little things.
Well, you know, I think if we bitch about a game like this, it's either really terrible or we really loved the game.
Sure. Yeah, it's because we're playing it so much that we find these little things, but I can't wait for the cycle to renew when Brawl comes out.
And we get internet rage!
Yes. Okay, well, let's wrap up new business, and we'll be back in a few minutes with our community report from James and from your listener mail. So we'll be right back.
Kids, it's your friend from down the street, Grandpappy Gamer here. I've been having a good old time with these videotape games ever since my great-nephew brought over his Wii bowling machine last Christmas. Me and Ellie don't have any grandkids of our own. Heck, we never even had kids. But that doesn't stop us from giving it the old Abraham effort every Thursday. Anyhows, I might be 87 years old these days, but I'm not too old to be a gray-headed gamer who can whoop your fanny in 10 frames. Ellie and me had to get a Wii bowling machine for ourselves, and we had a good old time with the other sports, too. We have some sophisticated tastes, and after a while, we got pretty tired of that stuff. That's when the great-nephew told us that you can buy more games for the Wii bowling machine. They look like futuristic 45s, except there's no B-side. That's a bigger rip-off than my Enzyte pills. This damn economy will have us choosing between videotape games and natural male enhancement before you know it. Anywho, turns out there's all kinds of crazy game diskettes you can cram into the Wii bowling machine. I reckon I'll be trying a few and telling y'all how they are by the by. Make sure you pass along my thoughts to your own grand folks in case I don't see them at Sunday school.
Okay, we're back for the community segment, and I'm going to turn it over to our community expert here, James Jones. What's been going on in the forums, man?
Well, the most utterly amusing thread over the past week has been a thread with the simple proposition that Brawl is the true Halo killer, which is something that I find fundamentally not good as a sentiment. Because anytime a game has been pegged as the killer of blank popular game, the game's either always failed miserably, not managed to live up to that billing, and usually been on the PlayStation 2.
Well, but plus, it's kind of like saying that apples are the pizza killer.
Well, you know,
I like both of them. I don't want one of them to die.
Yeah, just like they don't have anything to do with each other.
It's one or the other. Well, if you love Nintendo, it's one or the other.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot play Halo.
Brand loyalty.
Yeah.
But, you know, the most famous instance was the PlayStation Magazine's Dark Cloud billing it as the Zelda killer, which, of course, is utterly insane.
I've played Dark Cloud, and it ain't.
But then, you know, PlayStation Magazine went on to do Killzone, the Halo killer, which was also utterly insane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but it's all media, man. It's all media.
It sells magazines. Interesting play of words, though, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, this time it's not such an interesting play on words. Because this time it moves into the realm of the potentially insane. To infer that two games on separate consoles with different bases, with different gameplay styles, with different everything, one would be the killer of the other. And the most utterly preposterous claim in it is, quote, Halo doesn't need a killer. It's irrelevant. See the hardware numbers for proof, even the month it was released.
I'm pretty sure that was totally sarcastic.
Yeah, I think that must have been. It must have been.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, because how it continues on, it doesn't really make a lot of sense after sarcasm.
Okay.
Well, I mean, all I can really say is that Gran Turismo 5 is going to be the Guitar Hero 3 killer.
For sure.
That's my statement. You can
confirm.
You can put that. You can print that in big capitals.
Got it in the crosshairs.
Oh man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to know.
They, like, step up. Lindemann's holding up the future dated newspaper. You know. And he's already selling the toilet paper with the logo.
See, I really want to know. In what sense does it mean kill?
Exactly. I was wondering the same thing. Kill how? Why?
Can't sales, literally, you know, they're just gonna sort of storm Bungie with like King Dedede and just murder him.
Admittedly, I wish somebody would make a comic with that as the premise, but that's not exactly what they're talking about. In fact, part of the justification used for this claim was that Metroid and Galaxy Prime 3 were delayed
and Zelda,
delayed multiple times and people didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't ready to go out and kill somebody, but now that Brawl's been delayed, people have pitchforks and are planning to fly to Japan to hunt Sakurai or whatever his premise was, and therefore
that'd be kind of counterproductive.
The lead up for Brawl must mean it's better than Halo.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just come to the conclusion it means the Brawl community is substantially more insane than the Halo community. Also, that Halo 3, was it ever delayed?
No.
Halo 3 was not ever delayed. No.
No, because they waited to the end to announce a release date.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like sane people would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nintendo maybe could learn something from that.
No, Nintendo doesn't need to learn things from that.
Yeah.
Where's your brand loyalty, man?
Yeah, come on.
I've got a question whether you're fit to lead this podcast anymore. Today.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I should never, ever, ever compare Nintendo to
what
Microsoft.
What does the N stand for?
like the warrior spirit of Tokyo or Kyoto or what is it? What does Nintendo mean? I can't remember.
Oh, I've heard a few things.
Oh, something about rising to heaven.
Like, yeah, I've heard that. So,
yeah, something like that.
I thought that was just an insane quote from.
I know what it is. It's something like. isn't it something like put your fate in heaven's hands? It's something like.
Yes,
that.
Yes, I've heard. That. I've heard something to that effect before.
Well, that explains Odama.
That sounds utterly insane enough to explain every action Nintendo has ever taken.
By the way, I'm really looking forward to the fan mod of Odama with Obama's face on the ball rolling around and knocking over lobbyists, you know,
and some sort of hope bonus.
I can't believe it hasn't been done yet. It probably has, and I just haven't
seen
it. Seen it's
box
so
art.
Obvious.
I've seen box art like that already.
Okay.
To go utterly off topic, what the hell is Yute Saito up to anyway?
He just made Seaman 2 for PS2 in Japan.
Okay.
It's probably not ever coming out in America.
He makes only mainstream games.
And
wow.
Yeah, and that came out pretty recently, so I don't think he's announced what he's doing next.
It'll be
that man might actually be crazier than Goichi Suda.
They should team up.
Oh God,
no!
I mean, that game would be an art project. Well,
they should team up with Jeff Minter.
It is bad enough that Suda and Kojima are rumored to be working on a Wii game. That game might be insane enough to make killers commit suicide. I can't imagine what Yute Saito and Goichi
to make
Suda
killers
would come
commit
with.
Suicide. What are you
I
talking
like
about?
Reviewers commit
I get
suicide.
Oh, reviewers,
killers. I'm like the
killers.
Like
that's
that
what
line.
I heard.
Yeah,
make killers commit suicide. I like that. I like that line.
To make killers commit suicide. That sounds like the tagline. For a Suda 51
really
game,
actually.
This game will make this game will make killers commit suicide and then rise to heaven. That sounds like the premise of a Suda 51.
There's been multiple
game.
Reviews where he's multiple interviews where he's confessed that he actually does all his game creating inspirational stuff on the toilet.
So,
on the toilet. Yes. Yeah. So, nice. Well, it might have confirmed the suspicions of some, but I'm not down on Suda, by the way.
Well, anyway, anything else in the forums we should know about?
There just the general reaction to Brawl's delay being, generally speaking, it's been in almost Zionistic defense of Nintendo. I believe one of the phrases used was, if the game was delayed 7 or 8 years, it would still be the greatest game ever, or something utterly insane like that. And
so are people not freaking out and going off to kill Nintendo?
Maybe a little bit. But generally speaking, anybody who complains is called a crybaby. It's the most wonderful form of internet trolling.
Nice.
Trolling in its purest form.
Come to Nintendo World Report forums. Enjoy the trolls.
Oh, yes. Except they're trolling for Nintendo. Usually trolls are against, yep. You know?
Interesting.
That's usually what you think of mm-hmm. as trolls. These are trolls protecting the bridge and actually, like, herding you across it rather than...
And beating you if you try to take an alternate yep. route.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a racket, basically.
Okay. Uh-oh. Well, let's move on to listener mail, and I thank everyone for sending in. We actually got more this week than we can read on the air, which is nice because it helps me weed out the shitty ones. So,
so if
means I don't have to read every single piece of crap letter that you guys send.
If your letter wasn't read on the air, you can write to Johnny. You can find his email address on the website under the staff mm-hmm. section.
Spam him, please.
Yeah, no, No, my point being that we're getting enough good letters now that you're actually going to have to write a good letter to get it read on the air.
Raising the bar.
You might want to put a little thought into it, because a couple of them we got last week were like, wow, diarrhea of the fingers.
You,
I mean,
you weren't impressed with the Phantom Hourglass hate mail from like however many months ago from the eight different addresses, which was the same apparently British guy saying that.
Oh, that, I mean, no, that was fantastic. If you want to send hate mail, do it. But
yes.
We actually got one email that just said, hey, you asked for email, here you go.
Oh. See, this is the problem.
It didn't actually say anything. It just said, here's your letter that you asked for.
Brilliant, because that guy just got on the air. Eh? Brilliant.
I didn't say his name, though, so not
he knows
really.
Who he is. Brilliant. Whoever you are, yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. He needs to step up his game. Step up the streets. Okay. Jovial Jeffer.
Brutal.
Oh, it's done been brought in. Jovial Jeffer asks, dear. Hey, you guys, first of all, I want to thank you for the virtual console reviews. I really appreciate the service because I can't afford to buy everything and there isn't room for all of them anyway. Well, maybe Jeffer, you should take some things out of the refrigerator. plus, I don't want to accidentally purchase a game like Urban Champion.
It could still happen.
Too many people
drunk.
Accidentally purchase that one. Here's my recommendation is that you don't accidentally purchase anything ever.
No.
You like really
put the
be
points
intentional
on
about
when you
it.
Have something you want to buy.
Okay, so anyway, he says Nintendo has finally made a half-hearted jump onto the online bandwagon. Did any of you own an X band back in the 90s? In case you haven't heard, awesome dial-up modem. First time that phrase has ever been uttered in English.
Awesome
dial-up modem that could plug into your Super NES or Genesis cross-platform, and then you could plug in certain compatible games such as Killer Instinct, Super Mario Kart, and Super Street Fighter 2. You could play locally or pay extra to play nationwide. Awesome. So it's like Xbox Live or Xbox Live. Silver or gold. Highly recommend that you read up on it on Wikipedia. And he says it worked well. People would pull out the phone cord before losing with no penalty. They still do that on DS.
Yes.
Anyway, that was his introduction to online gaming. You could even buy a keyboard with it for chatting before and after the match. So in many ways, it was more advanced than Wii's online network. Had a very dedicated cult following, eventually canceled, of course. Anyway, he wants to say that at one point he was number one in the nation at Mario Kart on the X-Band leaderboards. Okay, I hope that got you lots of money and women. And
I regret to say I do actually have experience with the X-Band.
Wow. Really? Okay, tell us about it, man.
I actually saw a demo of it at one point, and I can't remember where I was where I saw it, but... I was in an alley, but I can't remember what the event was it was at, but it was some event aimed at children, and I was playing it, and I just seemed to remark that it was, you really couldn't tell you were online or what I was playing, but from how he described it, there must have been some community element behind it, but I just don't recall it being particularly fun in ways that it would have been fun to play with the person sitting next to me, but you know. I was only playing it through one level of Mario Kart, so maybe it was the most awesome experience mankind
could
have.
Well, I mean,
how could it not be? It was on an awesome dial-up.
Well, I mean, I think at that point, you know, the missing element there would be the size of the community. I mean, what makes Xbox Live so cool is that I know so many people that are on Xbox Live. But I mean, with X-Band, it's, you know, they're, even if I would have been able to get my hands on X-Band, which I couldn't in Canada at the time, I wouldn't have known another soul on there. So.
Didn't the N64 have a similar product that came out of the Game Shark people, like Shark Board or something?
There was, well, okay, the Shark Board was, it did allow the N64 to get online, but only for web browsing and email and chatting.
Oh, fantastic.
Not to play games online. The only online gaming solution for N64 was the DD,
yeah.
And that was only in Japan, and only one or two games supported it at all.
How merciful.
Yeah. So
I just remember seeing the Shark Board in stores and thinking it was the most utterly imbecilic piece of hardware I'd ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it lets you do email on your Nintendo 64, so if, you know, it was one of those web TV kind of deals. It was like, you can have the internet without a computer, but you wouldn't really want to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really aimed at gamers. It was more aimed at giving people access to the internet when not everyone had a computer in their home.
Basically, yeah. Except, okay. Whereas web TV was marketed towards grandparents, the Shark Board was, you know, marketed towards kids. So anyway, that's the X-Band. Well, I remember seeing it in Nintendo Power and thinking it looked interesting, but, I mean, at the time, I didn't understand why online gaming should interest me. You know, I'd never really done it back then, and it did seem kind of expensive, and it only worked for a few games. And I'm, especially for a game like Killer Instinct, I'm really... really concerned about what the lag would have been like.
Absolutely,
on that game,
yeah.
Over dial-up.
Oh, I'm sure it would have been horrific.
Yeah,
but,
and that game, you couldn't play it with lag.
No.
Did he say who made the X-Band?
What?
Did he say who made the X-Band?
No, I mean, clearly it was a third party because they had versions for Super Nintendo or Genesis, but...
Right. So I'm curious why Nintendo would have pushed it in the party press.
Hmm.
Party press? Oh, well,
Nintendo,
I mean...
Power.
You know, it might have even been an EGM back then. I read both at the time.
Okay.
So maybe it wasn't Nintendo Power. I don't know. Anyway, interesting little slice of history there, and thanks to Jovial Jeffer for the letter. Our next and final email for this week is from Oni. Oni asks, he wants to know about HD versus Blu-ray.
Neither.
This is great for a gaming podcast. he understands that one is 20 gigabytes while the other is 50. But my question is, what is the advantage of all that space? I always thought that a smaller, more efficient coating was better technically for smoother operation and less loading time. And, yeah, basically. I mean, there's a trade-off, and I'm not an expert on this. Lindemann might know more about it than I do. But it, as far as I understand it, there's sort of a trade-off between compression as far as accessing that information versus the time it takes to decompress the information.
Yeah, I don't know really too much about, you know, write speeds and decompression and all that. He's talking about, you know, coding efficiently. And I mean, you can code efficiently whether or not you have 50 gigs of space or whether or not you have a megabyte of space, you know. I mean, obviously the more space any developer will tell you that the more space that they have, that means the more stuff that they can put on there. They just don't have to worry about, like, compressing anything, you know, like movies and sound files and stuff like that. Like, all that stuff can just go right on there uncompressed. And you'll see that in PS3 games where they'll have, you know, very, like, lots, like, of extra features where they're, like, full-length movies, like, really high-quality movies where, you know, even if it was on a DVD, you wouldn't be able to have those kind of things. Like, I know on Uncharted, there's a whole bunch, on PS3, there's a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes films, and they're really high-quality films, and there's, like, 10 or 15 of them on there. So, it's just, it's you know, the more space you have, the more content you can fit on there, which is, you know, and really, I mean, that should be the way the industry is going, because the more content that we can get for our money, the better.
I think we could say for sure that Blu-ray is probably HD, DVD, and Blu-ray are probably a lot more space than you need in any realistic sense for game development right now. Maybe in a few years, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be useful once everything goes HD. I mean, the main use for it right now, I mean, you know the way it goes. Every time, I mean, the more space you have, the more space, you know, game developers will find to fill it up. And right now, I was just, you know, one of the, you know, things I can think of off the top of my head is in, you know, the amount of extra content that you see on games. Like on the Blu-ray games on the PS3, you see a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes movies and, you know, really like kind of high-quality you know, videos and stuff like that that you probably wouldn't see, you know, on the 360. You can just fit a whole lot more content on there. So that's really the advantage to all that space. As far as efficient coding goes, I mean, that's kind of irrelevant. That has no reflection on the amount of space that you have. You can code efficiently in 1 megabyte or 50 gigabytes. It's really up to the coders. It's not really, you know, it doesn't really depend on how much space you have. So,
well, and as far as load times go, from what I've heard, one reason that the 360 tends to have, and Wii tend to have, better load times than the PS3 is that the PS3 is using like a single speed or a dual speed Blu-ray drive, whereas Wii and 360 have, you know, like very mature DVD drive technology that's up to, you know, 24 speed, 48 speed, whatever. So the drives themselves are already capable of reading much faster. And so that sort of balances out.
That also goes to the fact that the more bits there are on the disc, the more movement the head's going to have to do to find what it wants.
Yeah, don't quote me on this, but
I don't know. This is all really nerdy, techy stuff.
I don't think that the PS3's load times are any worse. In fact, you know, in games like Elder Scrolls, the load time is actually quicker on the PS3. But then again, that's because of caching.
Okay, but isn't it installing it on the hard drive? It's caching on the hard drive, which you can't do on 360 in most cases because not every 360
Don't quote me on this,
but
I think that Blu-ray drives, even a one-speed Blu-ray drive, is quicker than like a high-speed DVD drive. I think so.
Well, that's possible. Even though it doesn't spin as fast because it's capable of reading more data per spin, basically.
I'm trying to remember what Sony pet project game it was that the developers came out and said and just basically touted for a week that, hey, we used every inch of this Blu-ray disc,
Lair.
So games need it now. And then
that
the
was
game
Lair.
Had really
that was Lair.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was Lair. They said that Lair was like 25 gigs in size and it could never be done on 360 because it was using just straight DVD.
And then,
yeah.
And then it had really horrendous load times and it was just...
I mean, I think...
Oh, it was Lair. I mean, it was Lair. It was
I don't think you'll see games that you couldn't do on DVD until you see stuff like Killzone 2. I think Killzone 2, where they're talking about, like, one stage of the game uses, like, 2 gigabytes of data. It's just absurd amounts of data in there, because, you know, stuff like that. I mean, the further you go in the PS3's life cycle, the bigger the games are going to get, and I think there will come a time where you will not be able to do the PS3 games on the 360 just because of the storage capacity.
And of course, as long as the sort of relative success of the 360 endures, then any multi-platform games are going to kind of conform to that standard, because if it continues to be more successful than PS3, so that means you're going to have fewer games that do take advantage of what there is to be sort of plundered.
That's a good point.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lowest common denominator effect here, but, it, you know, and Wii gets caught up in that too, because it's also using basically standard DVDs. But I just don't think it's a big problem right now.
No, I don't.
It's a few years away from really being an issue. Sony put Blu-ray in the PS3 not because they thought PS3 games would need the space, but because they wanted to promote Blu-ray format.
And they completely screwed their manufacturing cycle, didn't it? I mean, that's why it got delayed.
Sure.
As well as with the process.
Massive problems with that. But
well, it will be because HD DVD is dying.
I'm sure they do.
So. It's done what Sony's wanted.
Pretty much.
But how much has it cost them?
I don't tell anybody to buy an HD DVD player just yet, or a Blu-ray DVD player.
I'm so over the argument over formats. I just
separate
don't
podcast.
Oni also had a that's really really not our domain here. I mean, that doesn't even really have anything to do with Wii at all. It's not even in the question. But Oni also asks, I think, a very interesting question about game reviews. And he asks if... Well, he says he had the realization that paying for games can make you more biased towards the game and basically make you speak more highly of it than you should because you have a vested interest in wanting to like the game because you've paid a lot of money for it. And he asked whether... Basically, do we think that because sometimes we don't have to pay for games, we get free copies to review, that makes us less biased about the game and more able to make an honest criticism of it?
I think it cut that the other way. Couldn't it make you more bitter because you spent money on a game and you ended up not liking it?
It could swing either way, I think.
I read a very interesting blog post over at 1UP by, I think, Sam Kennedy, I think. He was talking about the whole Gerstmann gate issue. And he mentioned that, you know, previous to the sort of the problems that they've had recently over at GameSpot, that basically they held themselves to a very high ethical standard. And for a while, they actually asked their reviewers to buy the games that they were reviewing to sort of, you know, internalize that cost as the actual gamers did. So clearly they thought of it the other way, that, you know, that you would be bitter if you had a bad game, and you'd be thrilled if you got value for money. So that's the way they looked at it, but, you know, look at where they went.
Yeah, just on a quick side note, let me just say that I'm pretty familiar with GameSpot's review policy, and if they actually do what their policy says, and I believe that they do, I know people who work there and they say that they do, they have one of the best editorial policies on reviews, period, of anything I've ever seen. I mean, they're the ethics that they apply to the process are kind of astounding. I mean, they do things that I wouldn't have even thought of to make themselves more impartial. The problem with Jeff Gerstmann and that whole scandal is related to pressures outside the editorial process imposing on that, whereas they never have before. And that's the issue. The people who actually work in the editorial department take their reviews so seriously. And I don't think it has anything to do with that. It has to do with corporate people there.
I mean, in fact,
interfering with the process. No, they
probably take their reviews more seriously than the new higher ups want them to. That's what it seems like from the outside looking in.
Oh yeah,
that's certainly the impression that I got from this article that was written. But you could see that, you know, that's how they thought that by internalizing the cost of the game for the reviewers, that did make them more impartial or more honestly critical. Rather than the other.
They were certainly very concerned about that. And, you know, John and I can both kind of speak to this, going back to the question and getting off GameSpot for a while. As far as whether or not we literally paid for a game in order to play it, affecting our reviews, my policy on this has always been that you should critique the game for what it is, and completely ignore the process of how you got it, whether you wanted to review it, whether it's for you or whatever. You know, basically review the game for what it is and put all that stuff on the side. And that's why we don't have things like a value rating, or, you know, I specifically tell our reviewers, don't quote prices in the review, because number one, prices get outdated very quickly in this business. But number two, I just don't think the price should be a factor in your criticism of the game. It can be a factor in your recommendation. You know, you can say, well, this game is easier to recommend because it's budget priced in a general sense. It's less than a normal game. And so that makes it easier to recommend. But that's a separate matter from whether or not the game is good and why is it good.
Well, indeed.
And that's the number one thing in a review. To me, a review is a form of criticism. And so your foremost concern should be, is this game good or not, and why? Well, and price doesn't have anything to do with that.
Indeed, because I think the thing is everyone has a different conception of what the value is to them. You know, so $20 to one person, or, you know, $40 to them, could be completely different. So you need some sort of, at least attempted sort of abstracted from all those things of how good is the game in an absolute sense. And then people can apply their own value judgments.
Yeah, I mean, price will always change.
Yeah, and I think with Orange Box coming out this year, that comes out a lot too. You've got stuff like Portal, which, how much did you actually pay for Portal? I mean, it's not even, you can't even really say what you paid for Portal.
Yeah, I mean,
it
price will
matter,
always change, but the quality, you know, of a game will not change. That's a constant, so that's the way you should look at every single review.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Hopefully that answers Ani's question. Thanks for the email. If you have questions, comments about the show, ideas for controversial discussions that we should be having, please send those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com and make it good, and we might we might read it on the show. All right, we're going to take another break and come back with a quick news segment. Be right back. All right, we're back with the news segment, and we always start off with virtual console games. This week we have Adventure of Lolo 2 for NES. That's yet another Hudson game. I wonder what their streak is. We have Super Street Fighter 2, the new challengers or the new warriors for Super Nintendo. So that's like the fourth. Is that the third or the
it's
fourth
the
Street Fighter?
Third Street Fighter 2 on the virtual console.
Yeah,
there's one left.
I think Hudson and the Street Fighter series are fighting for the title of most games released for virtual console.
the other one on Super Nintendo is it's Alpha 2 or Alpha 3?
Alpha 2. There was a version.
Alpha 2. Okay. I remember seeing that at the rental store, but
that's it. Once
they released,
I totally missed out
on the Alpha sub-series.
Yeah.
I didn't get that.
Done with beat-em-ups way before that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's the third one, and this one is at least significantly different from Street Fighter II Turbo, which is not much different from the original. Knowing that Turbo would come out, it was really hard to recommend the original, but Super Street Fighter II is not necessarily like a strictly superior game to Turbo.
Yeah,
it's so
different.
It kind of makes sense if you're interested in buying both. There may be reasons to do that.
So what's the one that everybody's waiting for? Alpha 2. Okay.
I'm not sure that many people for Super Nintendo is really considered a good version of it.
I think it's supposed to be sort of surprisingly good considering it is the Super NES, but I don't know how good that is in an absolute sense, you know.
Yeah, because that version was contemporary with versions for Saturn and PlayStation.
So it might have been sort of admirable but not necessarily great.
Yeah, it's kind of like DDR on the Game Boy. I mean, like, it's neat that they did it, but it's
they
not
did
really.
That?
If you have other options, yeah, there really is one.
Well, oh dear God! I would say the last Street Fighter II game released on the SNES is regarded as being substantially good because it was a CPS2 title originally. And considering what the CPS2 was capable of, the fact they were able to do what they did on the SNES was pretty mind blowing. Yeah. But I have to say that the Street Fighter series is probably one of the best arcade fighter to home console ports consistently of all of the arcade fighters that
Most of them are good.
Yeah, I would say all but maybe one are good.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, there you go. It's I'd say a pretty good week for Virtual Console, although still only two games.
Yeah, it looks like
I'm starting to wonder. Yeah, it's getting pretty consistent with the two games per week, and I'm starting to wonder if they've done that due to like maybe feedback from publishers who are worried that their games aren't, you know, they're getting crowded out by the other games, and so they want to reduce the number every week. I mean, they're certainly not running out of games. That was a joke
over here we had only two games. They're two completely different games. It was Riot Zone for the previous week and 1080 Snowboarding, but it's still two, so it seems to be a sort
wait,
of policy.
Wait, you got 1080?
Yeah, it's coming. It's already in Japan. You'll get it soon enough, don't worry.
I think when people download 1080 Snowboarding on Virtual Console, they may be disappointed.
I never played.
It's not as good as you remember. Mm. If you've played SSX in the past 6 or 7 years, it's going to be very difficult to go back.
Once again, I'm beginning to wonder whether you know you're really, really committed to this Nintendo thing, Johnny.
Yeah, 1080 is just kind of a 1080 is kind of a bland SSX, isn't it?
Well, no, here's the deal. When 1080 came out, it was awesome. The best snowboarding game by far, okay? Yeah. It was so much better than Cool Borders, which was the one for PS1, this third-party piece of
crap.
There
you go.
Yeah.
I don't even remember who made Cool Borders, but they made a bunch of them, and they're all pretty bad. But at the time, 1080 was by far the best snowboarding game ever, you know, and it was very strange for Nintendo to be releasing an extreme sports game. But if you go back to it now, 1080 has like 4 levels, maybe 5 levels, 4 characters. The controls are very stiff. It's really, really hard to land a trick. I mean, if you jump, you're probably going to fall. It's really, really difficult to land anything. And the levels are really short, you know, and that was a problem in Avalanche on GameCube also. The levels were really super short, and basically you could blow through the game in like an hour. Mm-hmm. And...
well,
let's just say Avalanche is not that much different from the original 1080, and that was one of the problems, is that they just didn't really advance with the times. But 1080 is very antiquated, I have to say. It really is.
Who developed 1080? What studio
Nintendo.
Did that?
Nintendo. Well, Nintendo EAD.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. That's kind of surprising.
It was a small team, but it was developed internally at Nintendo, just like Wave Race.
Mm. Well, just,
not by the same people necessarily. But.
Right. Well, it's just, you know, at least they're still releasing N64 games. It's sort of been rather hit or miss when they decide to do that.
Once every other month, yeah.
Well, they've got plenty more to go through. They're really rationing them out. When same with Super Nintendo games, especially first-party Super Nintendo games. I think at this point, Capcom may have released more Super Nintendo games than Nintendo has.
They've released more Street Fighter 2 games than Nintendo's released SNES games.
Yeah. Well, especially if you discount the Donkey Kong Country series, which has all of its games on there now. Let's just be Rare games rather than Nintendo.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, anyway, our first big news story of the week was NPD sales for December 2007. And just very quickly, I don't want to talk numbers at our listeners all for about a long time, but Nintendo DS sold a freaking 2.5 million units in 1 month.
Yeah, it's incredible. It really is.
Are people
buying their third and fourth DSs now? I don't really understand this.
Are these for the US?
Yeah. This is not even including Canada.
To put that in perspective, I think the PS3 in the US has sold something like 3.5 million lifetime.
Yeah.
That's just sad.
So think about that.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty incredible. So, wow, 2.5 million DSs. Now, we had a comparatively disappointing month with 1.35 million units.
Only.
But,
yeah.
Well, I mean, it was completely sold out
exactly.
The whole month.
I mean,
that's every single unit they could put into the channel.
I mean, I think the figure...
There's no telling what they really would have sold.
The figure for the world supply was like 1.8 million. So still, the vast majorities of Wii units being shipped to the US are being sold in the US.
Right. Well, Wii sales have slowed down a little bit in Japan. I don't know about Europe. We don't really get sales figures for Europe very much.
No,
but
we don't.
I think they're starting to shift some units from Japan to America because they've slowed down there. But man, I mean. And honestly, DS has been supply constrained as well.
Yeah,
which is kind of hard to believe considering DS came out in 2004.
Yeah,
I actually had a hard time finding a DS Lite for a friend of mine for Christmas. I just couldn't find one except for some pink thing.
Only one
of those.
Even at 2.5 million units in 1 month, the DS maybe could have sold even more than that as well.
Yeah, incredible.
It's just kind of mind blowing. It really is. Well,
once again, my only comment is that I don't even know who's buying these things anymore.
I can't.
I mean, it's like all the hardcore gone. You know, all. I mean, they
yeah,
must
they've,
be getting
they've
way,
got,
way into the.
Nintendo's buying them and burying them to look better.
Exactly. it's like a bunch of ET cartridges. They're just buying them and burying them out in Arizona.
Eight
or something.
Million were bought.
Anyway, let's move on from numbers. We talked about this quite a bit last week. I don't know how much we want to get into it, but the Super Smash Bros. Brawl delay that
no.
we talked about at length last week
no.
was actually...
That's not true. That's impossible.
No way. I'm going to kill somebody.
Internet rage.
I have fury.
Rage mode triggered.
It's funny because
I'm going
this
to fly to Japan.
This delay was confirmed like 3 hours after, maybe less than 3 hours after we finished recording last week's episode.
Yeah.
So
I still hadn't gotten the last email yet when the confirmation came out.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, oh god.
Yeah, and we still don't really know why it's being delayed. But, you know, it's apparently not entirely localization problems. It was delayed a week in Japan, so there seems to be, at the very least, they needed to push it back so they can make more discs.
Yeah,
but maybe
that,
they had to squash a few bugs
that's
also.
That's the speculation,
no telling.
Just printed copies of the game.
It could be, yeah.
I just kind of wish Nintendo would come out and say something, even if they're lying to us. Just tell us something.
Well, Sakurai's...
To get all the awesome
in the English explanation was basically... production delay, whatever that means. I mean, that could be construed so many different ways. But March 9th in the U.S., so about a month here. A week in Japan, a month in America. I don't know why, but...
I can tell you that game is pretty much in the bag. I mean, there's...
It wasn't
there
delayed
must be
in
something.
Europe.
Yes, it couldn't be delayed in Europe.
Yes.
Because it doesn't have a release date yet.
I mean, all I can tell you is that, I mean, they are not going to be making major changes to the code base or doing anything crazy like that. It's something probably, like, outside of the development process, because that game, if it's shipping in Japan, what, like, in a couple of weeks?
The 31st.
That, it's done. They're not changing it. Yeah. I mean, they might make a couple tweaks here and there, but any tweak, they're going to have to test that, so they wouldn't change it.
Well, speaking of, I'll mention this briefly, but we've probably heard the last of the character announcements on the Smash Dojo blog, okay? They did mention something about using stickers in the single-player mode so you can, like, upgrade the stats of your characters as you play through. It's pretty crazy stuff, but I don't think they're going to announce any more characters. We do know there are at least several secret characters. I mean, Sakurai has even mentioned secret characters on the blog, but probably those will not be revealed on the blog ever. I'm guessing ever.
Even
after it's out in Japan and everyone knows exactly what's in the game.
Yeah.
They probably just won't mention it in any official capacity. But if you are interested, if you don't mind spoilers, to me, you can't spoil a fighting game.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really understand that
concept.
It's not like someone spoiling the ending of a book for you before you get to it or something. I mean, we're talking about characters that you can play as.
I don't even know why they have hidden characters, but, man, kind of baffled.
Just to get you something to unlock.
I know. Yeah, it's fun to unlock things, but...
most of the time.
I don't really understand why they're keeping them hidden necessarily, because as soon as this game is out in Japan, everybody will know what this stuff is. Even if you're trying to avoid it, you'll probably find out whether you want to or not. But if you want to know now and you don't mind, hit our forums and go in the Smash Brothers discussion area, and you'll find a thread that basically reveals three characters that have not been officially revealed, but there's pretty good proof of why these characters are in the game.
And in
so,
fact, that proof comes from a Nintendo oversight on one of their webpages.
Yes.
Right.
Commercial.
It's not like hearsay. It's someone has like visual evidence of a few characters being in the game that have not been mentioned yet. So if you're interested in that stuff, go to our forums. There's a little advertising for us. all right, let's move on to Winning 11 / Pro Evolution Soccer. I asked Greg before we started the show if he could talk about this, because I figured the rest of us couldn't. I'm actually culturally prohibited from caring about this game, but I will say, I saw this announcement about the game, and they were talking about all the Wii features, and I thought, damn, they have actually put some effort into making this for the Wii.
Absolutely.
Greg, I mean, what do you have to say about this game? It's coming out in America, by the way, not just Europe, but America in April.
Into my relative wheelhouse here, although I am probably one of the biggest NFL fans in the world. So the thing is,
I love talking football, American football, with Europeans. By the way, it's one of my favorite hobbies.
But what's really interesting about this is they're taking a completely different approach to so many sort of sports games. It says, a lot of sports games, waggle controls or whatever, it's dumb it down. You know, a lot of it in terms of, like, EA's got family play, which, you know, where you don't use the nunchuck or things, or various, and even with the core control schemes, you know, it's fairly conventional, and maybe you end up simplifying it. With this, they are completely changing the way you play the game, basically, because what you'll be able to do with the pointer is essentially direct traffic. So you'll be on the ball with one player and be able to tell another player where you want him to go, and then play the pass so that he runs onto it and, you know, sets up a scoring opportunity. So they're taking it to a far, far higher level of interactivity than you've ever had, as far as I can see. I mean, you've always had things like, oh, if you press two shoulder buttons together, you know, it activates a sort of predetermined forward run. But this is far, far more sophisticated than anything you've seen before in that regard.
It has online play, right?
Apparently it has one-on-one online play. You won't be able to play, you know, have someone locally to play together with and play a duo like you can in Mario Strikers Charge. But still, to have online play at all with the Wii is still, I suppose, we have to appreciate it.
Sure.
But like I said, I think what could be interesting with this is there's a litmus test for, can sophisticated sports games on Wii work? both from a gameplay point of view, you know, is it going to overwhelm people with its complexity or not? Or a B, from a sales point of view, you know, are people going to say, yeah, I want the best version, and actually it's a Wii because I can get way more into this than I could before? Or are people just going to say, no, I fear change, I'm just going to stay I'm going to stay with my dual analog controls on 360 or the PS2 even?
I'm curious if the other sports game developers will look at that and say, oh, we could adapt that into our game too. Because, for example, EA, which has a stranglehold on all the major football games, American football, could easily adapt that to something like changing the play on the field. And the question is, would they actually look at something like this and say, oh, wow, that was a good idea? Or will it just sort of languish in the Winning 11 series? And
I
think EA has enough hubris that they don't really pick up a lot of ideas from other games.
Well, the thing is, I mean, EA has especially to change something every year, because otherwise their games would be totally the same. Wait a minute.
Roster updates.
Yeah, I mean, they have got a problem. Rosters. They have got a problem with Wii Madden, though, because it's still PS2 money. You know, and I mean, it's really inert. If that just stays, if it's very mildly iterated upon for the next 4 years, you're talking about a game that was essentially made in the year 2001.
It's a Wii S2 game.
Yeah.
And they don't have much incentive to do anything different on the Wii version, because the PS2 version is still outselling the Wii version.
Oh, by a big margin.
Dear God.
They'll continue to make a PS2 version for 3 or 4 more years, because there was a PlayStation version in 2004, I think.
Yeah, it'll keep going. Yeah. It will doublessly keep going. No doubt about that. But
you know, I'm pretty sure there's a version of Tony Hawk 4 on Nintendo 64.
Nice.
Really?
That's.
I mean, there's some crazy stuff.
That's horrific.
Anyway, so the thing in the announcement for Winning 11, we should call it Pro Evolution Soccer. That's the way. I think that's going to be the name of it in America. Is that they have the feature, and I've never seen this in any other third-party game, but you can build an entire team out of your Miis.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's
because
awesome.
They're kind of covering both ends there, aren't they, in terms of, you know, they're sort of giving it the sort of wee casual kind of dressing, but it sounds bloody hardcore what they've got planned for the gameplay.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I haven't seen anything like that since Wii Sports.
I mean, you know what it actually reminds me of?
And even in Wii Sports, you can't build the team. You pick your Mii, and the rest of them are random. And I'm pretty sure in Pro Evolution Soccer, you can actually make a team of your Miis.
And you can, like, you can mix them in with real players as well, if you just want
to. Oh, that's sweet.
If you want to detonate your head with just madness, then you could do that too.
That's like Mario being in NBA Street V3.
Oh. Yes, incongruous.
We need more of that. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean,
thanks, Nintendo.
To be honest, the whole thing of like controlling the player while directing another player, the kind of almost playing two games at once, it actually makes me think of Sin and Punishment, where you control your guy sort of almost independent of where you shoot. That's the kind of level of thing we're talking about.
Well, there you go. I mean, if you're a fan of Sin and Punishment, you should get this soccer game.
Yes, confirmed.
Okay. The last news story that we've got this week, Nintendo released this huge release schedule for the first half of 2008. Probably a lot of this stuff will get delayed, or the names will change, or whatever. But we can't go through this whole schedule. It's on the website if you're interested in this kind of thing. But I wanted to hit some highlights. We have a couple games that are on the list that we've never really heard of before. There are a couple of weird things with the dates. For Wii, there's possibly a re-release of Karaoke Revolution American Idol version. Yeah. This is something that came out on the PS2 a couple years ago, maybe just last year. And I don't know if this is like based on the Harmonix version, or if they've given this over to Neversoft or somebody else to do it. I don't know. Well, it wouldn't be Neversoft because Konami is releasing it. They own Karaoke Revolution. But anyway, interesting stuff. Maybe more karaoke for Wii, so they can try to reverse Boogie, I guess. I thought it was funny that the release schedule had Nitro Bike for Wii scheduled in March, and we actually just got the final review copy of that today, so
Slick.
That game is out.
Slick. Mm-hmm. Slick.
Now.
Wait, what?
But Nintendo doesn't think it's coming out till March. That's kind of strange.
I think it's even out here.
I don't know.
If it's out here, it must be out. Yeah.
Maybe it's a different Nitro bike.
From the reviews I've heard, maybe they should have kept working on it until March.
Yeah. No.
We shall
Burn.
See. Mario Kart, the big Wii releases this year that we know of course, Mario Kart and Wii Fit. And neither one of them got a release schedule,
no.
A real release date here. Mario Kart says something about spring, and Wii Fit says Q2, which basically means spring,
yeah,
the way Nintendo
kind of
defines it. So
the two in together there, I don't know why.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Maybe it makes
you
it
got
easier
some things that
course.
Say spring, some say summer, and some say Q2.
July is still spring.
Well, technically, summer starts in July. So
it can keep them out of a bind when the game doesn't come out until July.
Anyway, so we still don't really know when those games are coming out. On the DS side, we got an announcement for Assassin's Creed coming out, I think, in February. That looks kind of interesting. I think we're going to get a small interview with the developer on that, so check the site for more info on that. We still don't know a whole lot yet.
Wasn't that game only officially announced like a couple weeks ago, and it was like the worst kept secret in gaming?
Yeah. Well, it was on release. It was on this crazy release list like a long time ago, like maybe even back at E3. It was on Nintendo's release list, but Ubisoft never said anything about it. I mean, no pictures, nothing, until just very recently, like last week. So we'll see. You know, I wouldn't have been all that interested in it before, but looking at the crazy sales and the controversy over the console versions, I'd kind of like to know more about it, you know?
Yeah.
It could be a big deal.
Apparently, I think it's a... Isn't it a prequel?
Yeah.
It's a prequel. Yeah, which the way that... The relationship of time with the way that game is told, I'm not sure how you could even do a prequel.
Yeah, that kind of could be...
Because it's supposed to be some guy in the present, like, reliving the past, right?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, too.
So the prequel part doesn't make much sense. We'll try to get that clarified.
Well, did anybody play Ubisoft's Prince of Persia game on the DS? Was it bad?
I think Obi played it. On the DS?
Yeah, they released the DS game, Dual Swords or something.
Huh. I played the strategy, the turn-based strategy game based on Prince of Persia for the DS.
Oh, okay. Maybe that was it.
That was not good to me. I mean, the strategy was sort of interesting, but the interface was terrible. It was really bad. Evan, I think, eventually took over the review because it was taking me so long to review it. I just couldn't deal with it, really. It was so slow.
I just have a hard time getting excited about a DS port of or DS whatever of a console game.
Well, the thing is, it's not a port. It's not like they're trying to recreate it exactly because it's, you know, they say it's a prequel, so presumably it's sort of its own project, so it could be interesting. We'll have to see.
Yeah, based on my on-the-fly research here, it'll cover how Altair became an assassin, and it'll cover kind of the events leading up to the console game. So that's what it...
Okay.
Okay.
We've got Myst being announced for DS, and we actually have seen some screenshots of that, got a little information about it. The thing that intrigues me about this, and I'm a Myst fan from a long time ago, on the PC, back when we first got a CD-ROM drive, you know, on our PC. The thing that intrigues me here is that they've added a whole other age called the Rime Age, R-I-M-E. So, assuming it's the same size as the other ones, that's like adding 20% of more game to this classic. It's kind of a strange thing to do. So I'm pretty interested in seeing how this turns out. But looking at the screenshots, I thought, man, the graphics on Myst have not held up all that well.
And they're pre-rendered,
it's
too.
It's just not very impressive anymore. Yeah, they were pre-rendered even back then, but I mean, the pre-rendering technology of 1995 or whenever it came out is pretty pathetic compared to what the DS can do in real time now, really. So, it may not blow you away graphically anymore, but I mean, it's always been a good adventure puzzle game, in my opinion. So, if you've never played it, this might be a good chance to catch up on it. We'll see. Bangayo Spirits for DS has finally been given an American release date. It's going to be published by D3, and that is the old Treasure arcade game that was originally released on Nintendo 64 and then later ported to Dreamcast. And maybe the Dreamcast version came out in America. I know the 64 version never did.
Yeah, I think the Dreamcast version did, and the Dead 64 version was something ridiculous, like 50,000 copies of it were ever made.
Right, it's really rare. a lot of people think it's amazing. Obviously, I mean, it's made by the, it was made around the same time and by the same people who did Sin and Punishment. So if you're into that, and you should be,
I'm very interested.
You know, this is something to look out for. I mean, I've heard very good things about the DS version. This is basically a sequel on the DS, and apparently it's pretty crazy. And this is, it's like a 2D shooter, and the entire screen is full of crazy bullets and homing missiles and stuff. So
apparently it's quite robust in terms of features. You've got some, like, level editor and things like that. It's, you know, they're not just sort of doing a sort of quickie port of an old game for a DS scale. You know, it sounds like you're putting some real effort into the handheld nature of it as well. So I'm really interested in it.
Yeah, put this on your radar. And we've got Pokemon Mystery Dungeon 2. There's a couple different versions of it. I don't know. This was surprising to me. I didn't know they were doing sequels of this, but apparently I think they're already out in Japan.
Yeah, they sold fantastically well in Japan. It was one of the best-selling, if you put the two together, one of the best-selling games of the year last year.
I'm stunned.
Yeah. I know, I don't remember who reviewed the first one for us, but they liked it. I don't know. I mean, if you're into this mystery dungeon kind of deal with randomly generated levels, and it's like kind of like a children's Diablo, you know, or a simpler version of Diablo. And speaking of that, Shire and the Wanderer is also coming out on DS in America, and that's exactly the same thing. It's even made by the same people. So a lot of dungeon hacking coming to the DS if you're into that kind of thing. And then there are a lot of DS titles with the letter Z in them where it shouldn't be, like horses and cats and a lot of stuff like
horses.
That.
Horses?
So, yeah.
Imagine
okay, maybe babies. That's not one.
Imagine babies with a Z.
That whole Imagine series comes off as horribly sexist.
Yeah, it's pretty much like,
I don't know,
you're going to be a hairstylist, get over it. It could be investment banker. Oh no. Get.
A mathematician. No. You're gonna be a cook.
Exactly.
I'm just reminded of that GameStop.
It's not even very imaginative.
Games for girls, and it was just like all it was on there was Cooking Mama, and it was this is horrible. Who did this?
Oh yeah.
Well, speaking of Cooking Mama, we have Cooking Mama Cook Off 2 for the Wii also coming out very soon. First one didn't get very good reviews, though, so I'm not sure, you know,
that series who, needs to stay on the DS.
Yeah, apparently. Anyway, so a lot of, I mean, it's a huge release schedule for Wii and DS. It's a pretty impressive array of stuff, or at least in sheer quantity. As far as quality goes, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to me that Nintendo's own first-party games are pretty sparse on this
list.
Absolutely. And you have to think stuff like Mario Kart has a good chance of being delayed later in the year. So, they're really banking, I guess, a lot on third-party stuff to kind of fill up the schedule for these first 6 months of the year. But
of course,
we'll see how it goes.
We don't even know what Nintendo's late holiday AAA game is, so...
No
idea.
Kind of waiting on things to be officially announced, and I guess Animal Crossing to materialize.
Yeah, well, we might hear something about that at GDC next month. I know Microsoft is probably going to be talking about their big holiday stuff, and Nintendo's got a lot of chances to do that. And of course, we'll learn a lot more about WiiWare. You know, the schedule doesn't have anything about WiiWare, and presumably, if it starts in March, as they say, then there could be quite a lot of stuff in the first half of the year on WiiWare that we still don't really know anything about.
Isn't that the Final Fantasy stylized, practically Pikmin game supposed to be coming out relatively soon on WiiWare?
Yeah, that's supposed to be one of the first games.
Yeah, so I just imagine that they'll start hyping that pretty soon.
You'd think if it starts in 2 months, they might want to say something about it, but... Nothing so far. Anyway,
it's gonna be shock and awe marketing.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're gonna spring it on us.
Every day I'm gonna wake up and see something about building windmills.
Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks, guys, for joining us, listening to these long rambles of ours.
Woo!
And we'd really appreciate your feedback on the new format of the show and the lineup of people we've got on it. And, you know, give us your ideas or your thoughts. Is it too long? Yes.
Yeah.
Is it too short?
No.
Yes. Really, though, I mean, we'd love to hear from you, so please send those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and, you know, check out the news article for links to dig us and subscribe on iTunes, so you'll get it first, basically, if you subscribe. You'll get it automatically every week. That's really nice. And, yeah, you know, listen in next week. Tell your friends. Help us make the show better, because that's what we want to do. We're here for you. All right, well, that's it. I guess we should just say goodbye.
Bye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, that was an awkward ending, but
yeah, well, just bring the,
I'm
just
not
bring
good
the
at that
music
yet.
In over it and it'll patch it.
Yeah, just drown me out. Famous, yeah. You can play the Shut Up award ceremony music over me.